can't tell if the chemistry's good by looking at it. It wasn't clear yesterday. For the last time, the saltwater pool is a chlorine pool.
This is the Talking Pools Podcast with pool pros from every region in the country. If it happens in a pool, you'll hear about it here. Everything from tips and hacks to the latest tricks and trends. Breaking news, we lay it on the line. We tell it like it is because we think you deserve to know. Hey guys, it's Rudy Stankwitz, and it's Thursday, which means we're going to talk about some CPO stuff, and this week we're going to talk about water balance, which deals a lot with the Langelier Saturation Index, and then also the values that are part of that, pH, total alkalinity, water temperature, calcium hardness, and total dissolved solids. We're also going to see how cyanuric acid plays a role. Before we jump into that, if you guys are looking for a CPO class, hit me up on my website, cpoclass.com. Click on the Schedule Registration tab. It'll take you right to the listing of classes I have, both in-person and virtual. You can attend face-to-face, or you can attend from anywhere in the world. As long as you have an internet connection, you can join in one of my classes. Also on that page, if you're interested, on the cpoclass.com website, click the tab for CPO practice test. There you will have a bunch of information that will help you prep for the CPO class. If you are currently enrolled in one, doesn't matter who your instructor is. It's all great information. I have flashcards. I have a practice test. I have some different short classes that you can go through to help build up your skills. Just brush things up, give you an advantage going into the class so you can have the best prep possible. Right now, I'm going to go grab a cup of coffee, and in a moment, we'll be talking about water balance. Imagine you have four fat kids on a seesaw, perfectly weighted, two fat kids and two fat kids on each side, both the same weight, perfectly balanced. The seesaw is horizontal. You give one of the fat kids a sandwich on one side of the seesaw. So now you have two fat kids on one side, two fat kids, and a sandwich on the other side. All of a sudden, the side with the sandwich is a little bit heavier. So the balance of the seesaw leans toward that side with the two fat kids and the sandwich. In order for us to balance this, we need to give a sandwich to the kids on the other side of the seesaw. So that way we have two fat kids and a sandwich on each side of the seesaw. Or I could just give each one of the fat kids a sandwich. Then I have two fat kids on each side and two sandwiches, still perfectly balanced. That's what water balance is about. Fat kids on a seesaw, it's about give and take. If I'm going to give to one, I have to give or take from another in order to keep things balanced. We're not going to be looking at fat kids today or sandwiches. We're going to be looking at pH, total alkalinity, calcium hardness, water temperature, and total dissolved solids. And we're going to see what it looks like as these values change and how they interact with one another for the protection of the pool, because it's all about protection of the vessel. That's what water balance is about, whether or not the water is scale forming or corrosive, meaning that we'll either draw calcium and carbonate from the pool's surface because we don't have enough in the water, or we have too much in the water and it can precipitate out and leave scale buildup on the walls. We don't want either one. We want it to fall in the middle where we're neither scale forming nor corrosive, and the pool lasts much longer because of it. This does also affect vinyl. Don't think you're off the hook. They are manufacturing vinyl with a certain amount of calcium carbonate in the formula for the liners nowadays. And it has been found in corrosive water situations that that water can pull the calcium carbonate that it needs from the vinyl, and it can also lead to a shortened life then of that material. Let's take a look at pH first, because it's probably the one that most folks are familiar with. pH is one of the more common tests that is conducted in pool water chemistry. We know that it tells us how acidic a solution is. The scale itself runs from 0 to 14. On that scale, 7 is neutral. We only deal with a very small portion of that scale. Our acceptable range in a swimming pool is 7.2 to 7.8. The ideal range is 7.4 to 7.6. This works out good for us using the test solution that we use. Phenol Red, that's the name of the chemical that we use to test pH. Phenol Red has the ability to test the pH from 6.8 to 8.2. So that 7.2 to 7.8 fits right in there nicely. Anything less than 6.8 with phenol red looks just like 6.8. So if your test turns yellow, we will call that 6.8. But all we really know is that it's 6.8 or lower, because 5.8, 4.8, 3.8 would look exactly the same. The same thing on the opposite end. If we're testing at 8.2, that's the maximum capability of that test solution, 8.2. 9.2 looks just the same, so does 10.2 and 11.2, so the only thing that we can say for sure is that the pH is 8.2 or higher. Some people say power of hydrogen, some people say potens hydrogen, doesn't matter either way, the one is just the German word for the same thing, both mean power of hydrogen. pH is actually the measurement of the hydrogen ion activity in that solution. Measured in the converse, the lower the pH, the more active the hydrogen ions are. The higher the pH, the less active the hydrogen ions are. Some folks like to look at it as the demand for acid, although it is not the acid demand. But if you have a low pH, it means that you do not need a lot of acid. If you have a high pH, that means that you could use some more acid. We know that it measures the acidity of a solution, and if the pH is low, the hydrogen ions are extremely active. If the pH is high, the hydrogen ions are much, much less active. If the pH is high, the chemicals that we use to lower pH, they will also lower your total alkalinity. So that's important to remember. You cannot add an acid to lower pH without it also lowering the total alkalinity. No matter how you add it, if you pour it slowly in one spot or broadcast it, you're going to lower both the pH and the total alkalinity. Doesn't matter. Muriatic acid is perhaps the most popular means of lowering pH. Sulfuric acid will do it. Sodium bisulfate will do it. CO2, carbon dioxide, when you inject carbon dioxide into water, it forms carbonic acid. That will then dissociate into a hydrogen ion. But then the other side of that is bicarbonate. So CO2 is actually the only method of lowering pH that will result in an increase in total alkalinity. Turbulence can increase pH. A lot of people like to say aeration, but it really isn't the aeration that raises the pH. It's the turbulence that the aeration creates. When you create turbulence in a solution, you cause the aqueous carbon dioxide in that solution to outgas. And when that happens, the result is an increase in pH. This is the only means of raising pH that will not raise the total alkalinity. Other methods of raising pH, soda ash, known as sodium carbonate, probably the best method of raising the pH. It has a drastic impact on both pH and total alkalinity. Sodium bicarbonate can also be used, but usually not the preferred means, because it will give you a drastic boost in total alkalinity, but only a very, very slight increase in pH. So it takes a lot of product to bring the pH up that way. And in the process, you will drive your total alkalinity out of range on the high side, meaning that you'll need to add acid to rebalance that, and you could ultimately end up with some type of a yo-yo effect. Still, a lot of folks like to use the sodium bicarbonate to increase the pH anyway. Why? One, it's readily available. It's easy to find. Number two, it doesn't cloud the water. when you add sodium bicarb to the pool water, unless the calcium level's high, you're not going to get a cloud in the water. When you broadcast soda ash, sodium carbonate, you definitely will cloud the water. Unless you pre-dilute your dose into a bucket of warm water first, and then that will keep the clouding to a minimum. What environmental factors affect pH? Pretty much everything. Anything that gets into that body of water that has a pH will drive the pH of that body of water toward whatever the pH of that thing was. So if rain comes through, and all rain is acidic, all rain has a low pH. It's different than acid rain. Acid rain has a super low pH, but rain comes through, it will drive your pH down because rainwater is acidic. Pine needles, when they're green, they are also acidic. They will bring your pH down. Turbulence, we've already spoken about. If you have a fountain, if you have any type of water feature, if you have your return jets through the side of the wall aimed toward the surface of the water, all of those things will drive your pH upward. If you have a salt water pool, just the process in which that system generates chlorine, that will also increase your pH. And we'll talk more about that in one of our later CPO Thursday sessions. If the pH in the pool water is low, you can run into problems like etching of the pool surface, which we already spoke about, corrosion of metals. You could end up with staining of the surface walls when those metals that were being corroded precipitate back out. Even people in your water have their own chemistry. People can change the pH of the solution. That's why when you're running your test in your test kit, you'll always use the cap on the test block. You don't want to use your fingers because you will alter that chemistry while you're testing if you just cover those open vials with your fingers, because your body has its own chemistry. If your pH is low, the water will be corrosive. You'll see etching of the pool walls and floor. We spoke about that. That's when it pulls the calcium and the carbonate from the walls that it needs, the water does. Corrosion of metals, and then staining of the walls and floor on the surface, because when we pull carbonate and calcium from the plaster becomes more porous, and those metals that are eventually going to settle out and cause some type of problem. In vinyl liners, you'll see wrinkling, and then your guests will also complain of eye and skin irritation. Now, on the other side, if your pH is high, you'll notice that your water is more scaling. You'll see cloudy water conditions, clogged filters, clogged heater elements, reduced circulation, and again with the metal staining, because we can't get away from that, your chlorine will not work as efficiently, and people will still complain about eye and skin irritation. Total alkalinity. Sometimes we call that the water's ability to resist a change in pH, because total alkalinity is part of your bicarbonate buffer system. It does its best job in preventing a downward drift of pH. It's the measurement of carbonates, bicarbonates, hydroxides, and cyanurates. That's a problem because we don't want the cyanurates. The cyanurates are interference on my test. So similar to using a test strip to test for calcium hardness, you cannot. Test strips only test for total hardness. When we use the drop test, that first 20 drops we add in the drop test is to skyrocket the pH to eliminate the effect of magnesium on our test, because total hardness is the measurement of calcium and magnesium in that body of water. We don't want the magnesium, so when we use the drop test, we can eliminate the magnesium. Unfortunately, there is no such test for total alkalinity. When we test total alkalinity, whether you're using the strips or the drop test, what you're getting is everything, which again is carbonates, bicarbonates, hydroxides, and cyanurates, if you're using cyanuric acid in the water. So we don't want that in there. We got to take it out. So we have to do a little bit of math because we don't have the ability to eliminate it from our test. The math is easy. If your cyanuric acid level is greater than 60, that's when we'll worry about it. If it's less than 60, we're not so concerned because the amount that it contributes is minimal. But anything greater than 60, we need to take into consideration. Take your cyanuric acid reading, divide it by 3. Subtract that new number from the total alkalinity, and that will give us our carbonate alkalinity. Carbonate alkalinity is the number that we want to use for everything in our swimming pool. So for example, if your cyanuric acid was 60 and your total alkalinity was measuring at 100 parts per million, I would take that 60 parts per million of cyanuric acid, divide it by 3, I would get 20. I would take that 20 parts per million, subtract it from my total alkalinity of 100 parts per million, and see that my carbonate alkalinity is actually only 80 parts per million, and that 80 parts per million in this example is what I would want to use. Capiche? So we remove 1/3 of the cyanuric acid from the total alkalinity. That gives us the carbonate alkalinity. That's the number that we want to use. Our ideal range for carbonate alkalinity is 80 to 100 parts per million. The acceptable range is 60 parts per million to 180 parts per million. Like I mentioned before, total alkalinity is a buffer against the downward drift in pH. So if a rain comes through, we already know it's acidic and it's going to affect the pH, and it drops it substantially, check your total alkalinity. It's probably low. By increasing your total alkalinity, you can deaden the impact of the rain on the pH or whatever else it was that was added that would drive the pH downward. If your total alkalinity is way too high, it becomes extremely difficult to balance your pH, to make adjustments. They call that pH lock because you have so much ability to resist the change in pH that it's difficult to change. To lower total alkalinity, we use all of the same chemicals that we would use to lower the pH with the exception of carbon dioxide, because carbon dioxide, again, will lower pH but increase the total alkalinity. So what we're looking at is muriatic acid, sulfuric acid, or sodium bisulfate to lower total alkalinity. To increase the total alkalinity, you could use soda ash, but that will also boost the pH significantly. Sodium bicarbonate's the better bet because it will drastically increase your total alkalinity and only have a very, very slight effect on your pH. The dose we use to increase total alkalinity when using sodium bicarbonate, which is also known as baking soda, is 1.4 pounds per 10,000 gallons of water to give us a 10 part per million increase in total alkalinity. We just mentioned calcium hardness. That's the amount of calcium dissolved in water. Water needs to have a certain amount of calcium and carbonate dissolved in solution. If it doesn't have it, it becomes aggressive. That's what we're talking about here. That's what this is all about, is the amount of calcium and carbonate saturated in this solution. Like we just touched upon, if you're using a test strip to test your calcium hardness, you're not actually getting your calcium hardness reading. What you're getting is your total hardness reading. This is the combination of calcium and magnesium in that body of water. It's important to understand that the magnesium reading can account for 25% or greater of that reading. So this test strip, at least for total hardness, it's giving us a number that we really can't use. So you're going to want to use some other method of testing for calcium hardness. The drop test works fine. You can use a photometer. There's a lot of other different means to do so. We want the calcium without the magnesium. That's the important thing here. The ideal level for calcium hardness is 200 to 400 parts per million. Your acceptable range is 150 to 1,000 parts per million. You see everybody freaking out when it gets to 400 or 500 parts per million. And yes, you should be concerned, but do understand the acceptable range does go all the way up to 1,000 parts per million. If your calcium hardness is low, the chemical we use to increase that is calcium chloride. We use 1.2 pounds per 10,000 gallons to give us a 10 part per million increase in that calcium hardness level. If your calcium hardness level is too high, the only means we have to lower that is by replacing water. You have to drain the pool either partially or completely. You have to dilute the water. That is the only method of removing calcium from the water. Replace it with water that has less calcium in it. How does temperature play a role? Most things dissolved in water dissolve better with warmer temperatures. Most things. There is a couple of things that dissolve better in cold water, and calcium, what we're looking at right now, happens to be one of them. So that's the major impact that temperature is going to have in us determining whether or not the water is in balance. If you are going to lower your calcium hardness by draining and refilling your pool, please do me a favor before you do. Check the calcium hardness level of your fill water to make sure it's worthwhile. Because if the calcium hardness level in your pool is at 600 parts per million, and the calcium level coming out of your tap is at 600 parts per million, if you drain and refill the pool, what did you change? I know you want to say nothing, but it's worse than nothing because you've changed everything except for the calcium hardness level. Because you're going to have to rebalance your pH, your total alkalinity, Your chlorine level, everything is going to need to be readjusted, except that calcium hardness level still sitting where it was. So always check your filled water before you make a decision to dilute. Because despite popular belief, dilution is not always the solution. Total dissolved solids. We call it TDS. That's not tedious and it's not an STD. It's total dissolved solids, TDS. That is the measurement of everything dissolved in a body of water. Everything that came with it from the tap, everything that fell from the sky, every chemical that you have added that has dissolved into that body of water. The means we use to measure total dissolved solids is with a meter. We use an EC meter, which is an electrical conductivity sensor. This is important because this meter provides us with merely an estimate of what our total dissolved solids are. I say an estimate because an EC meter can only measure those things in the water that can hold an electrical charge, like salts, metals, things along those lines. It cannot measure those items that do not hold an electrical charge. For example, I like coffee. We know this. If you like coffee too, and you and I decided we'd go grab a cup together, if we both filled our cups from the same coffee pot, no cream in either one, and you were to add sugar and I was not, if we were to test the total dissolved solids levels of each cup of coffee, it would be identical. Because sucrose does not hold an electrical charge. In fact, you could add enough sugar to your cup of coffee so that the spoon stands up in the center all by itself without you touching it. Those folks that drink sweet tea, they would consider that to be the perfect amount of sugar. And we would still have the same total dissolved solids level. The only method of getting a true total dissolved solids reading is not very practical poolside. It's a method called gravimetric, where you actually take the sample of water, boil off all of the water, let it go out in steam, and then measure on a scale what was left behind. Again, not very practical poolside. So until somebody comes up with a better method, the electrical conductivity sensors and the estimate that we get from those for total dissolved solids, we're just going to have to make do with that. As far as increasing total dissolved solids, that's not something that we do. We pretty much deal with what we get. Lowering total dissolved solids, just like lowering the calcium hardness level, the only way that we can do that is to replace water. Whenever your total dissolved solids level is 1,500 parts per million higher than what you started with. So when you first fill your pool, take your total dissolved solids reading. That's your starting number. When the water is 1,500 parts per million higher in total dissolved solids, that's when you drain either partially or completely to get that number back down. If you don't know what your total dissolved solids level was when you filled your pool, take a sample of your fill water and test the total dissolved solids level of that. That is going to be the closest that you are going to come to knowing what your TDS level was when you first filled your pool. But again, pool or spa, whenever the total dissolved solids level increases 1,500 parts per million over what you started with, that's when you're going to want to replace water. And of course, we never drain water from a pool unless we are qualified to do so. If you have the correct licensing in your area, you also have to be familiar with groundwater levels and the installation of well points. If you are not, sub it out to somebody that is, or hire somebody to do it for you. We're going to talk about pools popping up out of the ground because they don't have enough water in them when there's been a high groundwater level. I just figured that I'd touch base on that here, but that's coming up in future sections as well. So don't drain water from your pool if you're not qualified to do so. Don't do anything to your pool or the pools that you take care of unless you are qualified to do so. We are now ready to tie it all together and talk about the saturation index. And again, this is just a formula, a calculation that's used to determine if the water's in balance. We want to make sure that it's not corrosive. We want to make sure that it's not scale forming. The imbalance range for this calculation is negative 0.3 through positive 0.5. Anything that falls in between negative 0.3 and positive 0.5 will be considered to be in balance.
At this point, if you have not done so as of yet, please go to my website at cpoclass.com. Go to the CPO practice test tab. Scroll down beneath the flashcards and the practice test. Here you will find charts and worksheets that you can download and print. Download and print both the Saturation Index Worksheet and the CPO Handbook Supplement for Chapter 6, pages 68 through 70. Having these pages in front of you for the remainder of this episode will help to make what is discussed more clear.
If you look at those pages, you will see that there's a chart. Underneath the words Saturation Index Factors, there's a chart that lists temperature, calcium hardness, and total carbonate alkalinity. Remember carbonate alkalinity? These three columns all have one thing in common. The thing they have in common is that for every value, they're assigned a factor. For example, if you're looking under the temperature column, you'll see that at 60 degrees Fahrenheit, we have a factor of 0.4 if we just follow the line across, staying in that same column. So 60 degrees Fahrenheit gives me a factor of 0.4. Same thing in the calcium hardness column. If I had a 250 part per million calcium hardness level, you would see that the factor is 2.0. If my total alkalinity was at 100 parts per million, you would see that my factor was 2.0. The other thing that these three columns have in common is that if we do not have our exact number, we will go with the next number higher. For example, if I told you that my total alkalinity was 80 parts per million. 80 parts per million is not listed. I have 75 parts per million where I'm given a 1.9. I have 100 parts per million where I'm given a 2.0. I would want to use the 2.0. So always without exception for these three, if my exact number is not there, we go with the next higher. Total dissolved solids, I have factors there as well. That's going to be in the chart beneath the chart we were just speaking about. No colors here. Total dissolved solids factors, anything below 800 parts per million, I'm going to have 12.1. Anything from 801 to 1500 parts per million, I'll have 12.2. Anything from 1501 to 2900 parts per million, 12.3. Anything from 2901 to 5500 parts per million, I'll have 12.4. And anything greater than 5500, I'll have 12.5. These factors, you always subtract. You always subtract. And that'll make more sense in just a second. Now, let's take a look at that saturation index worksheet that I had you print. Here it gives you the opportunity to list the readings for your values, your test results in a column. Alongside of that, it asks for your factors. So utilizing these two charts, after we have written down what our numbers are, find the appropriate factor for each one. Once we list the factors, we're going to do a little bit of math. We're going to take the pH reading, add to that the temperature factor, add to that the calcium factor, add to that the alkalinity factor. And yes, I said pH reading because when we're looking at the saturation index, pH is what it is. Whatever the pH is what the factor is. So we're going to add the pH, temperature, calcium, and alkalinity factors together. We're going to take the total from that and put that in our subtotal box. From that, we are going to subtract our calcium hardness factor, whatever that number was. And that will give us our saturation index reading for this body of water. And we will now know whether or not the water is in balance. And again, anything below negative 0.3 will be considered corrosive. Anything greater than positive 0.5 will be considered scale forming. Anything that falls in between negative 0.3 and positive 0.5 will be considered to be in balance. So saturation index equals pH plus temperature factor plus calcium factor plus alkalinity factor minus total dissolved solids factor. Let's say you're off and you need to fix this. We're out of balance. It's either corrosive or scale forming. It doesn't matter which one. This is just an easy way to get us back into balance without having to make this complicated. Three of the values have an ideal range: pH, carbonate alkalinity, and calcium hardness. If those three that have an ideal range are in the ideal range, your water will almost always be in balance. Almost always. So for pH, our ideal range, 7.4 to 7.6. Total alkalinity, our ideal range is 80 to 100 parts per million. Calcium hardness, our ideal range is 200 to 400 parts per million. If this is ever out of whack, get those three values into their ideal range. Figure out what you need to add, add the chemicals, make the adjustment. And then if you're not in balance, at most, you'll just have to tweak it slightly. And that will most likely be in extremely cold temperatures, which you probably won't face anyway. This is the session about water balance. I hope that this was helpful. If you have any questions, shoot me an email, talkingpools@gmail.com. In the meantime, like I said, if you need a CPO class, if one of your team members needs to get CPO certified, go to my website, cpoclass.com, click on the CPO certification schedule page. It will take you to the listing of my in-person and virtual classes, so you can attend with me face-to-face or from anywhere in the world where you can get an internet connection. If you want to practice, no matter whose class you're in, go to the CPO practice test tab on that same website, cpoclass.com, and that's where you'll find these worksheets, charts, flashcards, practice tests, and a whole slew of other things that you can use to go into the CPO class as prepared as humanly possible. Thank you for hanging out with me today. I appreciate you. Check back next Thursday, where we're going to talk about water problems. Until then, be safe, be good. I just wanted to take a minute to say thank you for listening today. I'm hoping you enjoyed the episode as much as we enjoyed putting it together for you. Listen, it's been a couple of wacky, crazy, screwed up years, from pandemic to Poolmageddon. I just want you to know that we are all in this together. If there's anything that we can do for you, send me an email at talkingpools@gmail.com. Again, that's talkingpools@gmail.com. We're here. This is your podcast. We are the Pool People's Podcast, of the pool people, for the pool people, by the pool people's podcast. This one is about you. So thank you for tuning in and listening. Do me a favor, click subscribe before you go. That way you don't miss an episode.